and we're your hosts. I'm Diane Bortoletto.
And I'm Monique Chicardo. Let's do it.
Hello, hello, and welcome to And Away We Go F1 Podcast, a Formula One podcast that goes beyond the track limits to include travel, food, and lifestyle surrounding the sport. I'm Diane Bortoletto, your pre-Drive to Survive Formula One fan, and right now I'm in Perth in Western Australia.
And I'm Monique Chicardo, your post-Drive to Survive fan, and I'm currently sitting on the floor of the family cabin, which is in the mountains of a place called Hunedalen.
Yeah, so this is the family cabin that you guys go to every so often for weekends away. And the photos I've seen on your Instagram, it looks just like there's nothing really around there, but it's just so beautiful.
Nailed it on the head. There's nothing but a couple of other cabins around here. We have to carry all our food up in a backpack from the car park, which when it's snowing is so hard. On the other side of the computer, which you guys can't see, I am looking at the beautiful lake and mountains, which we will be walking through as soon as I'm done with this.
Oh, how nice. We've got a non-race week this week, Mon, after the Spanish Grand Prix last weekend. And then we've got Canada coming up next week. But I've had a bit of a chance to watch, well, I've binged actually the whole series of F1 The Academy on Netflix.
Same. I feel you.
First thoughts. What do you think?
I love it. I absolutely love it. My very first thoughts are it's not Hollywood yet. And I love that about it.
Yeah, you're right. It feels like how Drive to Survive felt.
Yes.
In the early days of Drive to Survive.
Yes.
It still felt, there were still small sections of it. Obviously, the drivers and their families are a bit hawks around cameras, like in their face or when they know they're being recorded. Like that's pretty obvious, but you still get heaps of raw emotion and they really yes. build up the high stakes that are what they're playing for, what they're racing for essentially. Really enjoyed it. In fact, there's 7 episodes in the series and I've got to admit, I cried in each episode about something.
Me too. When you're saying that there's real emotion, there really is real emotion. And I literally wrote it down in my notes that you're so vested in these girls and they, you know, there was a race that, well, actually a lot of races, poor Bianca Bustamante wasn't having a great season last season. And they just at the end of races would just break down, her and I think Leah Block. There was a couple of moments where they were just absolutely bawling their eyes out. And you know, you could really, really feel it. And like you said, it kind of harks back to those early Drive to Survive days, you know, when they were following Daniel Ricciardo and they went to his family's house and Daniel was being a bit of a Wally on camera. And, you know, you get to see that. You get to see their personalities, which I think is what is lost a little bit in these newer seasons of Drive to Survive. It's more about the drama. It's more about the cattiness between teams and team bosses.
The drama.
It is. It's the drama. And there's still drama. Of course there's drama because, you know, it's a race and it's high stakes. And these girls, which you learn in the very first episode, these girls only have 2 years to prove themselves in academy. They're not allowed to race for more than 2 years. So
no.
you get that drama through that. Which, yeah, I don't know. I really liked it.
Me too. And it's just really interesting to see the different backgrounds of the drivers as well, of the girls, yes. where they come from. And
the Abby Pulling versus the sisters.
Yeah, that's right. Abby Pulling, whose family is
mechanics.
I don't want to say poor, but yeah, they're very sort of working class, not flush with funds. There's not a spare million sitting in the bank waiting for someone to take up a new hobby like racing. So every decision that they've had to make has been really financially based. And so for her, winning was everything, or she wouldn't be able to continue on racing. Whereas the girls from the Emirati, I think they're Dubai or Abu Dhabi where they're based. I mean, just the footage of their home and stuff, you're like, wow. And their cars that they're driving. They are mega wealthy.
I think it was a really good comparison in that particular episode because you did have Abby Pulling, who was very working class, like you said, very hungry for the win, because if you win the championship in academy, your racing year the next year is fully funded. So for her, she needed that. Whereas these girls, obviously they still care, but it's a little bit different for them. And it was a really, really good comparison. I haven't yet finished the series, so I've still got two episodes to go. But it was interesting because I really wanted to watch the series. And Espen was like, not really interested. And because we're at the cabin, I was at the cabin and because I had it on the TV, he was like, oh, I really want to see what this person's dad looks like now. Oh, so what's happening there? And I was like, yeah, you do want to watch this. Trust me.
Andrew got fully invested in F1, the Academy as well. Again, I said, I want to watch this and I want to watch it now because we want to talk about it on the podcast and I wanted to watch it anyway. So he kind of sat through the first episode and I was like, I actually really like this. Every night he'd be like, "Should we watch another episode?" I'm like, yeah. So he was invested in it as well. But one thing that wasn't made abundantly clear to me, and I don't know whether I was just distracted and missed it, is after, like, they can get booted out after 1 year of in F1 Academy. It's not an automatic you stay for 2 years. But after 2 years or after their time in F1, the Academy, like the winner, yes, they get a fully funded race seat and Abby's going to GP3, which is a feeder series into Formula 3. But do they all go to GP3 or, I mean, because Andrew's like, where do they go afterwards? Where, like, do they go to F2? Do they go to F3? Like, so it's not, that's not, maybe the drivers have a choice. I don't really know.
I feel like they might do because in the case of Dorianne Parr, who I'm obsessed with, I think I'm so obsessed with her because all she ever wanted to do was get in a go-kart, but she couldn't reach the pedals because she was so little. And I resonated with that.
Kind of funny. Can you relate?
I resonated with that. And I just think she's a beautiful, beautiful girl and she's very driven. And
very driven.
Yeah. And I think in her instance, Mercedes look like they really want to keep her on. And I feel like maybe, I guess it depends on where they feel like they can place you and where you're best off. If you're, because all the girls are aligned with one team or with a team, and if they're happy with you, they're not going to boot you, surely. I don't know.
That hasn't been made, wasn't made clear in the series, so I don't know. Mm. And the other interesting thing about the series is I love Susie Wolf. I think she's just a phenomenal woman and like total role model. She's doing so much great things for the sport. She had achieved so many great things herself when she was racing. But my husband was like, oh, she's a bit hot, you know. I'm like, no, she's not. She's awesome. Was Espen the same?
No, he didn't comment on that. But I know what you're talking about. Like when Bianca was too far over a grid spot and she was like, this is not on. This is a rookie mistake. This should not be happening. You know, this is the very fundamentals. And she literally sits and over, very good point, but she was not quiet about that. And I took that as her being so proud of the racecraft that she doesn't want this series to look like amateur hour. This is where professional women go. So I think she was just phenomenal. She was just the CEO saying what needed to be said. And that was that.
I agree.
Do you think people would have the same reaction to how forthright she is and how outspoken she is if she was a man? Because I don't think so.
Yeah, probably not.
Mm. Yeah. So, which I find really interesting.
I found myself cheering for some of the drivers in F1 Academy. And now I'm even more interested, like way more interested in the series than I was before watching Netflix.
It's the drive to survive effect, right? It's
totally.
as soon as you watch something and you become attached to the characters and you understand the behind the scenes more of what's happening, of course you're more invested, because I feel exactly the same way. I've watched 2 Formula Academy races in person, 2 or 1, I can't remember now. And ever since I watched the first one, I was like, no, I really want to try and be interested in this because it's more motorsport that I can watch, but it's also women and I want to support that. And but they don't have that many races a year. I think it's only 5 or 6. But now that I have watched the series, I'm doubly as invested. So, highly recommend anyone watching it.
Where can people watch F1 Academy? Is it on F1 TV?
It is. It is. So Formula 2, Formula 3 and F1 Academy are all on F1 TV. I have a wonderful, wonderful plugin for my Google Calendar that pre-populates all the races across it. Yeah, right. Okay, that pre-populates all of the races across all of the formulas. So I get to see what's on each weekend. And then, yeah, it's all live on F1 TV. The replays are up immediately after. So even if you don't get to watch it straight away. But
so if you don't get F1 TV like us poor souls in Australia, it's not on KO. So it's not on KO Sports. If anybody knows how to watch Formula One Academy in Australia, hit us up. So Mon, have you got news for us?
The only thing that I've kind of seen flutterings about at the moment are whether Horner's going to be leaving Red Bull and where he might be going. So
there's been some chatter about that.
And with Alpine not having a fabulous team principal, because let's face it, Flavio is A, not a fabulous team principal, B, also not supposed to be a team principal. He's just an acting team principal at the moment. I've seen some little kind of rumours about maybe he might go there.
I've heard Ferrari. I don't know why.
Imagine Fred Vasseur leaving Ferrari now.
No. But that's what I heard was, Ferrari, which is, when I saw that, I thought, that's not right. That's not a good fit.
I feel like if there was going to be any movement, like the logical place for him to go would be to Alpine. I mean, it's obviously not a top team at the moment. It's the very bottom team at the moment, but there's an opening there. It kind of makes sense.
Is there an opening there though, or is Flavio cementing himself into that seat?
Look, it's hard to tell, right? Who knows? Mm-hmm. Because he obviously, I feel like he likes that position. He likes being in charge. So he probably doesn't want to give it up super willingly. But I feel like for someone like Christian Horner, who has the aggressiveness needed, or like who has a bit of aggressiveness behind him, you know, he's not a James Bowles. I feel like Flavio might have a bit more of a soft spot for someone like Horner, who's a little bit.
I can't see it working. I can't see it working between those two, but.
Oh, could you imagine?
No. Any other news?
No news, but I do have a question for you. I was just thinking about it and I really wanted to know your opinion, because obviously we've been talking about Liam Lawson and how things didn't go so well for him in Red Bull and how he's been demoted, and, you know, Yuki is showing some promise, but he's not taken up that seat and done exceptionally well either. So my question for you is, if you were Isaac Hadjar, who out of the three remaining Red Bull-owned teammates there are to Verstappen, he's sitting at the top of that kind of pile of three. If you were Isaac Hadjar and you got the call up to say, would you get in the Red Bull, would you do it?
No way, not a chance. Not in a month of Sundays. No way. I just wouldn't. The Racing Bulls, the V-carb car, seems to be better than the Red Bull car, unless you're Max Verstappen. And look, I also feel like that the whole world needs to apologise to Checo and be a bit more compassionate to Checo, because, yeah, there's been two other drivers sitting in that seat and he performed probably better than either of them. So it's that cursed second seat. If I was Isaac Hadjar, I'd be doing everything I can to get great results this year. I'm not sure how long his contract is, but this year, maybe next year as well, and then be looking outside of the Red Bull family for the next seat.
Absolutely. I mean, he's lining up and shaping up to be the best performing rookie of the season, which puts him in good stead to find another seat in another team. And I am with you. I probably wouldn't be looking at a Red Bull seat. Not in this climate. Not in this climate.
And next year they're building their own power units. So that could also be an epic failure.
It could be fabulous. Who knows? Maybe they're wonderful. It could be, you know, the best thing to happen to them since since Verstappen.
Well, there's also talk about him moving as well, so potentially, but you know, he's not entertaining any rumors. He's shutting everything down, much like he shut down the interviews after the Spanish Grand Prix.
Interesting. Well, not interesting. I kind of thought that's what you say, but I just think it's an interesting situation for Isaac Hadjar to be in. And, you know, poor Yuki, he was the one that was doing so well in the Racing Bulls, the V-Carb, before he got the call up for Red Bull. And, you know.
He'd done enough time there, though. He'd done enough years in that sister team. So it was, I think it was the right thing for him to step up to Red Bull. But it's, it must be hard for him. I've got a question.
All right, let's go.
If you were Lawrence Stroll, who would you put in the car to replace your son who's got an injured wrist?
Oh, that's a really good question. I don't know why my mind went straight to Seb Vettel because he hasn't driven in a Formula One car for ages. But
I'd love to see that. Yeah. That'd be great.
Right? Wouldn't it be amazing? And I just feel like he'd be able to do well. I would say, easy low-hanging fruit would be Bottas. I mean, he is a Mercedes driver, but he's sitting right there. I don't know who their Formula 2 drivers are.
I think Drugovic.
Okay, Felipe.
Drugovic has been mentioned. But back to Bottas, it's the same, like they use a Mercedes power unit as well. So
it could work.
Yeah. But, you know, it's also the Stroll's home Grand Prix, the next race in Canada. So I think Lance Stroll will be doing everything you can to get back to racing.
I have a fun question for you, actually. Out of all the current drivers on the grid, who do you think would have the best autobiography? Not necessarily now, but like, who would you want to read an autobiography by? And I say this because Susie Wolf's autobiography or biography has just come out. So it's on my mind. I want to read hers, but who would you read from the grid, the current grid?
Fernando Alonso.
How did I know you'd say that?
or Lewis Hamilton, actually, because Lewis, I just feel like, I mean, he's the Hollywood story, isn't he? Like, you know, from rags to riches, from struggles to incredible success. Oh, did you see in the news that he met with the British Prime Minister and they're putting together an education program to help to ensure that underprivileged kids have access to education through his Mission 44, which is just brilliant. Yeah, brilliant. It'd be Lewis Hamilton or Fernando Alonso. What about you? Whose autobiography would you want to read?
I feel like someone like Ocon's or like if we take the two kind of older drivers out who obviously have history, they have a lot of things they've done in their lives, because obviously, you know, you can kind of picture those autobiographies being amazing. But I feel like someone like Ocon or even Leclerc could be cool, because again, they're not super, they don't come from super wealthy families. I mean, I don't want to read Lance Stroll's autobiography. His dad's a multi-millionaire billionaire, so I don't really think that it's that remarkable or relatable. I mean, I could be wrong. There could be amazing things that happened in his life, and he's probably a super lovely guy, but I just don't think his autobiography would be as interesting as someone like Ocon, who again has come from a working class family. Leclerc comes from a working class Monegasque family. Even someone like, and people will probably be like, oh, of course you say Piastri, but you know, his mum's a naturopath. His dad works for they make communication like things.
Well, and his dad owned that company.
There you go. So he works and owns the company.
So I think his dad was self-made. I watched an interview that Oscar did on another podcast a while back. It was before the Australian Grand Prix. And I remember Oscar saying, you know, that he was just lucky that his family had the means to be able to support his racing. So,
yeah. But I feel like his story would be kind of interesting too, because he just seems so humble. Like his family seems so humble as well. I mean, did you see Edie, his sister, at the Spanish Grand Prix? And, you know, it was so refreshing to see someone just so authentically herself and didn't have, you know, slicked back hair and high heels and a Louis Vuitton hanging off her arm. She was just her. And, you know, it was just so refreshing to see. So I think it would be a really interesting story.
All right, let's play some word association, Mon.
Okay.
First thing that comes into your head when I say flags.
Red. I don't know why.
First thing that comes into your head when I say tyres.
Slicks.
Slicks. First thing that comes into your head when I say doing.
Poor thing.
First thing that comes into your head when I say Italy.
Love. That's such love. A terrible. Could I not come up with anything better? Love. Love Italy.
I love Italy too. And last one, first thing that comes into your head when I say stroll.
Rich. Very rich.
Fair enough.
Yeah. And it just coincidentally, we'd just been talking about him. But yeah. All right. I'll give you my five. Ready?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Hang on. Vegas race.
Litzy.
Next one. Fred Vasseur.
Likeable.
Oh, good. Yes. He just, I don't know why, he reminds me of, is it Groot? From the one that owns all the minions?
Yeah. He reminds me of, I can see why. It kind of reminds me of a clean-shaven Santa Claus, but I don't know why. Like, he's just got that jolly nature about him and he wears red a lot, yeah.
Okay. Next one. Liam Lawson.
Difficult.
Oh, that was a very politically correct answer. Next one, full slick tyres.
Lots of rain.
And final one, F1 great.
An F1 great? Ayrton Senna. Okay, race predictions. So we've got Canada coming up in Montreal. I've not been to Montreal. It's a place I would love to go. I've been to Canada, but not Montreal.
I've not been to Canada and I've been meaning to go ever since one of my old roommates, who was one of my besties, moved back something like 10 years ago. So probably overdue for that visit.
Oh, it's such a beautiful, beautiful country. I highly rate it. I've wanted to go back ever since I've been. I haven't got there yet.
Well, there's a Formula One race that runs there every year, so chop, chop.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Well, predictions for Canada. I'm thinking, I'm going to say Oscar Piastri for the win. I'm going to predict, I think Lando's going to give it a red hot crack, but I'm still going to put a Ferrari in between them. And I think it's going to be Charles Leclerc, then Norris.
Yeah, I think I will have to agree with you on this one. I agree with you as far as Piastri winning. I mean, I know Norris has said that he's got his fight back, but I don't know. I'm going to put Piastri as taking the win, and then I'm just conflicted about the Ferrari and Verstappen, because Verstappen had a majorly bad week last week. So I think he's going to come back with a vengeance. And he is going to.
It's a good call, actually.
Yeah. He's absolutely going to just go hell for leather. And I feel like pace wise, he can't really outpace the McLarens. But I do think his skill, his fight, his hunger, his anger, he's probably still going to get up there. So I'm going to go Piastri, Verstappen, Norris.
Excellent. For everyone watching on YouTube, just a big shout out. Thank you for all of your comments, good and bad, and ones we agree with and don't agree with. But that's what makes the world go round, doesn't it? If we all thought the same thing, it'd be really boring. So keep them coming.
Opinions are the spice of life. So if you like what you've watched or you like what you've listened to, don't like what you've listened to, please, please, please leave us a rating, leave us a comment. You can do it on YouTube. You can do it on all your favorite podcast listening apps. We're also on social media, so you can find us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn. And if you want to send us an email, you know, we love hearing from people that would love to throw an ad in there or anything like that. You can email us at andawaywego, F1podcast@gmail.com.
Absolutely. We are taking sponsorship requests, so feel free to send them our way. And thank you very much, Mon. Great to chat to you in between races. Thank you for having us in your ears. Until next week and until lights out. And Away We Go podcast is produced by Diane Bortoletto and Monique Cicato.
Let's do it.